Hi guys, welcome to my channel Journey and Beyond Untold Stories. Today we have someone very special and her name is Mara. Mara is an experienced entrepreneur and investor in the life sciences industry, currently based in Melbourne, Australia. She co-founded Cytowell, a diagnostic company focused on early detection of infection. With a PhD from Harvard MIT in health sciences and technology, Mara has worked with top healthcare firms and is currently a key player at Brandon Capital, where she invests in groundbreaking life sciences ventures. Welcome, Mara. All right, Mara, thank you for taking out time to be on my podcast, Journey and Beyond. How's it going? How's life?
Wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity to be involved. Everything's going really well. Happy to be starting out the new year with something so fun to do.
All right. So let's dive into your journey. How did you find your first investor for Cytowell? And what was that experience like?
So, you know, we've talked about this before, Shefali, but you hear a lot of no's when you are looking for investment. And I think one of the things that's very important to do is look for the informative no's. So I was involved with a bunch of pitches for Cytowell before we found our first investor. And we found our investor through some of the networks that were available in San Francisco, where there were pitching sessions that were available with folks who were interested in contributing to new startups. But we had to go through an evolution of the story several times before we were able to find the right pitch that was resonating with investors. And so we found that person through those.
Nice. And when you raised your first $1 million, was that experience like?
It's great. I mean, it's one of these things where you find that there's a big difference between people being supportive of the ideas that you're going after and then actually putting down money in the bank. And so you find that the tenor of the conversation changes from generally supportive to more and more specific questions. There's a break point at which you've clearly convinced folks that it is something that they should invest into. And then there's a lot of, even once the decision has been made to invest, there's a lot that needs to happen in order to actually get the investment in.
Yep, very true. As a founder, it's natural to have lots of insecurities and second guess your decisions. How do you manage those feelings and how do you ensure that you are making the right choices for your startup?
You have to back yourself, to be honest. So nobody knows your product the same way that you do. Nobody's spent the amount of time that you have on it. And so I think it's the combination of staying open to reasonable criticism that enables you to do that titration on your story or on the direction you're taking or whatever it is to say, yes, I actually agree with you. I think we should do X, versus times when you say, look, I don't think you understand as much about this situation as I do, and backing yourself. But if you decide that, you know, with all of the information that you have, that you actually know more in that particular situation, it's a question of soldiering on, because those dynamics are so shifted in terms of not everybody, you know, wanting to invest in your idea.
Yeah. That's very true. Probably out of 100 people, one will be interested to invest in your idea.
And a lot of that has to do with, and we say this all the time at Brandon, there's a lot of great investments out there that just simply aren't within our target area, right? And so that doesn't mean it's not a good investment. It doesn't mean it's not a good idea or a good company. It just means it doesn't fit the exact investment criteria that we're looking for. So we're looking for a venture return, for example. There's some people who might have a business that's better bootstrapped, rather than taking venture money. So there's a lot of different reasons why an investor may not choose to invest. That doesn't mean that there's a problem with your company or your idea.
So my next question is, how do founders filter out which investors are aligned with their mission or with their product line or with their company?
I always recommend that founders ask incoming investors what their investment hypothesis is. What are they trying to achieve with their investments? And listen for things that are either similar or different from the attributes of the company that you're running. It's also important to ask investors if they have timelines that are important, either for putting money in or seeing a return on an investment. And so all of these things can help you to kind of sort people who are looking to do the same type of investment as what your investment is over the same timeline that you're looking to achieve the outcomes that you are. I can recall conversations that we had, for example, with tech investors as a life science company, where they were looking for, you know, ultra unicorns, right? $40 billion markets. And I said, look, there's no $40 billion market in life sciences. And so we're clearly not aligned in terms of what this and what your investments need to provide and what my company can provide to you. And so that was really easy to sort out within the first couple of conversations, if not the first conversation, and it helps. So you want to know what's their check size, what is their investment portfolio, what are the things that, you know, are in or out in terms of those investment criteria. And people are very willing to tell you that because they're doing the same thing. They're trying to sort out which companies will fit.
Nice, very insightful. What motivated you to transition from being a co-founder to investing in life sciences through Brandon Capital?
So I had actually worked with Third Rock Ventures in the United States prior to starting Cytovail, and had always really been interested in the impact that being an investor can have in terms of translating great ideas out of academia into being clinically useful products, which means having a product. And so one of those vehicles can be starting a business. So when I made the decision to move to Australia, which was for love, I thought about what it was that I wanted to do in my next phase of my career. And I said, look, I really want to get back to the investing side of the table. That led me to go and have a lot of conversations with people in Australia to say, look, what are the opportunities to do that type of investing here in Australia? And I was lucky enough to find a really good match with the Brandon team.
Nice. So in your view, what is more important, having a great idea or executing it well, and why?
You must have both. You can't just have one or the other. That's the honest truth. Necessary but not sufficient on both of those, right? And so I suppose what I would say is if you don't have a good idea, then there's no point in proceeding, because really when you think about it, the idea has to come before the execution. So you must have an exceptional idea in order to get off of the ground. But then that execution piece is also critical. But the good news is that those two kind of end up going hand in hand. And we'll get to this a little bit later in the podcast. One of my key pieces of advice is if you have an idea, to go out and seek people who have done similar things in the past. And if those people say, yes, I see the value of what you're doing and I'd like to help you, then you may be launching both with what you have now validated as a good idea, but also people who may be able to help you on the execution side.
Nice. Given your experience in diagnostic, what excites you most about the future of medical technology?
It would be really hard for me to limit that just to my experience with diagnostics, given that within Brandon, I've also spent a lot of time, probably the majority, on the therapeutic side as well. But what I can say is that what has always driven my interest in being in this space is a combination of my nerdy interest in biology and then the impact that that can have on humans. And so, you know, if we're looking to name certain technologies, I do believe that AI is going to be a very interesting technology in the next 5 to 10 years, if not beyond that point. I don't think it's going to solve everything. Other things that I'm really excited about are the return of interest in pharma and therefore in the startup world to larger indications that affect a lot of different people. We've kind of gone from an ultra rare phenotype, which is still very important, to also looking at some of these more common conditions. Yeah, and particularly within diagnostics, I think that the rapid scaling of the amount of data that we are able to collect will inevitably lead to better therapies and better diagnostic capabilities.
Yeah, nice. You co-founded Cytovail. What was the most pivotal moment in Cytovail's growth, particularly in moving from clinic to market or commercializing it?
So I actually spent a period with Cytovail before the point that it was commercialized whatsoever. But what I can say is that there's no one pivotal moment in any journey. I would say that getting that first investment was very critical. So Cytovail also benefited from grant funding. So you can say even before Cytovail existed, one pivotal moment was getting a grant, which enabled Cytovail to really get off the ground. The next one would have been that first investor dollar that we've already talked about. The next one would be finding somebody who is a strong clinical collaborator who became really a thought partner for us as we were running our clinical studies. Another one would be deploying our first instrument. There's so many of them, right? Yeah, and then there's the ones that are more defensive, you know, where you say, we have successfully reduced this risk that could have taken down the company and has not. So there's no one pivotal moment.
Okay. Well, it makes sense. It's hard to nail down on one moment. Yeah.
I think what it means is that there's every year there's something that you are doing to impact the likelihood of success of your business, and the continued work that you're doing is all critical. It can't be summarized in one moment.
Very true. So we all know that entrepreneurial journey is very tough, right? Who has been the biggest source of strength when you were doing Cytowell?
Look, I think it's very important to deeply trust the people that you are on that journey with and to be able to trust their various backgrounds, because you should have various backgrounds, and also the people that they are, and that founding group can be a huge source of strength. But I think, you know, another thing that really has driven me has been the impact that I've seen in companies and furthering people's careers, which is a different kind of impact than bringing forth a product or something like that. And so I think both of those things gave me strength, but it's all people, right? It's who do you want to, we always said this when we were at Cytowell, who do we want to be in this locked in the submarine with? You know, because you're really sitting there with a limited number of people and you can't have jerks in your summer.
Can you describe a challenging moment in your entrepreneurial journey?
I think really the challenge for me has been to do what I can do today and live with uncertainty, which is probably a good life lesson, right? Mm-hmm. But to say I don't get the certainty today that we're going to get the next investment, or we're going to find the right clinical collaborator, or that this product's going to be successful, but rather that you have to live with that uncertainty and say, look, I don't have to solve that problem today, or I can't solve that problem today. I'm doing the most I can with it. And what I'm going to do is move the bar forward with like a massive burden of uncertainty on the side. And I'd say that was probably one of the biggest things in my journey as an entrepreneur, to just be comfortable with the unknown.
Yeah. Very true. There's so much uncertainty in the startup world. You just don't know when you're going to go bankrupt.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it is definitely something where you can see the money dwindling and be very concerned about what that means for yourself and other people that you care a lot about. But you also have to be willing to face that with integrity and say, I don't want to take more investment dollars if I don't think that this is a worthwhile product to bring forward, even if it means a bad outcome for myself and other people.
So you were first a founder and now you are an investor. What do you look in startups before you invest?
On both sides, I think it's very important to look for differentiation, why you are going to be successful where other people have failed. And so there's two big sources of differentiation, particularly in the life sciences. One is that we have a novel insight, and in particular that's something that's been done with one of the, you know, founding leaders of a scientific discipline. That can be a very strong source of differentiation because they understand the particular part of biology that they're talking about inside and out. And then the other one is technology driven, which is to say that you have an approach that can do something that other approaches can't do. The second one is harder because you have to prove that your technology is different. Although, you know, we can all think of hypothetical differences for why a technology could be better. The proof is always in the pudding.
Nice. You're someone who has lived in different countries, right? First US, now Australia. What challenges did you face in establishing yourself in Australia, and how did you adapt a new professional and cultural environment?
So it's a really interesting question. I think one of the things that caught me off of guard was that because Australia and the United States share a language, there's not a huge language barrier, but there can be a big cultural barrier in terms of how you conduct business. So for example, people in the United States are very clear in articulating what they've done in the past, what makes them exceptional. There's probably a little bit of like mayonnaise on top of that, so an extra 10%, they make themselves sound really good. Whereas like in Australia, there's more of like, oh, I've done some stuff in my past. And it turns out that person has sold billion-dollar companies and like raised, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars or something like that, and none of that kind of shows up. And so charting those waters in terms of understanding how to communicate when maybe means no, right, in both of those situations is very, you know, it's something that took me a while to kind of cotton on to, and I just needed more examples of what to do. But I think it's also potentially a place where you can bring strength from whatever other culture you're coming from. So there's benefits in the way that, you know, each culture operates. And so you can draw from that strength from something else that you do to perhaps off-road a little bit in the culture that you're living in, which can get you to a good result because you have a little bit more space that you're willing to play in.
Yeah, nice. Well, thank you so much, Mara. Thank you for taking our time to jump on the podcast. Guys, thank you so much for watching the episode. If you found the episode insightful, then please like, share, and subscribe.